For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This program is a paid commercial announcement from Jacob Media Partners and does not reflect the views of WPHT or its management. Today's program is pre-recorded.
Introducing Pathways Consulting Group, a company that will align your IT needs with your business goals. Pathways is a full-service ServiceNow partner. What does that mean? It's simple. Pathways will collaborate and design, develop, and deploy solutions for your company today that will define tomorrow. Pathways will provide world-class enterprise service management solutions. Pathways Consulting Group. They listen. They care. They execute. Go to PathwaysCG.com. That's PathwaysCG.com.
This is Women to Watch.
To rise above all of the noise and fulfill every last one of your dreams.
Women to Watch, sharing the real stories of the most accomplished women in the world.
It is for those frightened children who want peace. It is for those voiceless children who want change.
Be inspired by women from across the globe.
True philanthropy comes from living from the heart of yourself and giving what you have been given.
Who are encouraging more women to pursue their dreams.
What I know to be true is that women were always meant to lead. And by shining a light on those doing it well today, my hope is that more women will find their own voice.
Now, here's the owner, founder, and host of Women to Watch, Sue Rocco.
Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to another week of Women to Watch. I'm Sue Rocco, and it's so great to be back with all of you. And we have another wonderful show for you this week. I am very honored to have with me Natalie Ganella Platts, who is the Director of Women's Initiatives for the George W. Bush Institute. We're going to have a lot to discuss in just a moment. As always, be sure to stay with us during the breaks, where you'll hear from our exclusive watch team of on-air contributors. And as we continue to expand our watch team and move into new markets, we're always looking for women to be a part of the show. If you'd like to learn more, feel free to email laura@womentowatch.net. That's L-A-U-R-A at womenthenumber2watch.net, N-E-T. And if you miss any of the live shows, you can always catch the podcast wherever you listen by searching Women to Watch Media. So now, again, I'm thrilled and excited to welcome to the show Natalie Ganella Platts. Natalie, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Sue. It's such an honor to join you today.
I was so thrilled that you were able to kind of join us kind of last minute. This wasn't planned far out as we typically do. So I'm grateful that you have the time to join us and tell us a little bit about your life story. And the first thing I wanted to ask you, whenever I hear Buffalo, New York, I think myself, like everyone else, thinks, oh my gosh, it's so cold. How did she survive it? So tell me a little bit about the community that you grew up in. What was that like?
This is a fantastic first question, because for anyone who knows anyone from Buffalo, in addition to the intense winters, you will know that we are immensely prideful of where we come from, because we're always the underdog, right? Like, we've never won a national championship in anything. It's freezing cold in the winter. But, you know, there's such an incredible sense of community here. We're known as the city of good neighbors, the Queen City, an all-America city. And we're just really prideful of that, right? And we're a Rust Belt city. And so there's a real sense of affinity. And, you know, it's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon here, right? Like everyone knows everyone else. And if you're, you know, on vacation halfway around the world, probably within two connections, someone you meet knows someone from Western New York. And they will also say just how prideful that contact is about where they come from. And what I love about where I'm from is just the authenticity and the character of it. You know, we're diehard Bills fans. We are highly defensive of our city. We have a strong sense of family values. You know, I grew up playing outside, and yes, I learned to ski, but we also have beautiful summers here on the shores of Lake Erie and Lake Ontario. And it's just this incredible place that we very much want to keep a secret because increasingly more and more people are moving here. But I couldn't have asked for a better childhood. I couldn't ask for a better sense of community to grow up in. And it's something that for those of us who leave the area, you know, we carry with us. And, you know, my colleagues joke that when I'm ready to retire someday, you know, I should go and join the Western New York Tourism Board because I just, you know, talk about everything I love about Buffalo all the time. But it's made me so much of who I am.
Wow. Do you, you know, you must have an incredible network there then in a tight-knit community like that. Do you find you're able to tap into that for professional reasons?
Absolutely. I think both professional and personal reasons, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am so grateful. I went to, in my undergrad, a very small liberal arts school that was part of the State University of New York system. And we have this fantastic university system in New York where there's lots of small colleges, community colleges. We also have large universities, but they're all part of the SUNY system. And for me, you know, when I was starting my professional journey, I'm so grateful for my professors and the university services that are available to students at Fredonia, because it really set the trajectory of where I, you know, began to go in my career. And going to a small college really opened up a lot of opportunities that I think people overlook. Likewise, you know, if you're looking to get into a certain sector, or, you know, you're looking to make an organizational connection, someone knows someone, right? And they're mm-hmm. always happy to connect you.
Right.
And again, we all carry that sense of authenticity with us, which I think is so incredibly important. But it's been important to me too to remember to pay it forward as well. So, you know, have been trying to give a lot of thought to how I can also give back to the community I came from and that made such an impression on me.
Yeah. You know, it's so true, the statement about business is people. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's how things get done. Making those really authentic connections and relationships with people. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about was your grandmother. And I just love the fact that she started a candy shop, her own business, in 1946, and also a union when she worked for a larger producer. And any woman who was doing that kind of entrepreneurial work in 1946 is a mentor. Tell me about her and the kind of impact she had on you as a leader.
So my great-grandmother, Theodora Eddington, who was fondly known to us all as Grandma Farm, because summers were affectionately spent on her farm, was just a spitfire in every sense of the word. And, you know, she, in so many ways, was ahead of her time. She actually separated from my great-grandfather in, you know, the early part of the 20th century, which was unheard of in those times. Mm-hmm. She started a business, and she was very adamant about the status of women. And her union that she started before she founded her own candy store was to address some of the inequities that existed. The fact that women were paid less, and the conditions they were working with under weren't always the most beneficial to the staff there. And, you know, when she'd kind of had enough of it, she started her own candy shop, which still is in existence to this day. It's actually a play on her name and her business partner's name, which ironically was co-ed. So her business partner was male, but, you know, it was this male-female partnership. And it was such an emblem in South Buffalo. And to this day, they still continuously top the list of best sponge candy producers in the region. And sponge candy is a very well-known chocolate confection that we attribute to this part of New York. But, you know, she was the type of person, like so many of those who came from the older generations who lived through the Great Depression and World War II and whatnot. You know, she just got it done and nose to the grindstone. And, you know, she could make a meal out of, you know, whatever was in her pantry. And she lived to be 93 years old. And just was incredible and really proud of her family. And she is, you know, the head of a long line of very strong women across my family.
Well, you must have some of her in you. And I think it's always so interesting to look back at ancestors and see which traits, you know, we carry forward. We're going to go into our first break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the rest of your family members and how, as many first responders in your family, that impacted you during the pandemic. Stay with us, and I'll be back with Natalie Ganilla-Platz, the director of the Women's Initiative at the George W. Bush Institute. Stay tuned for our Watch team.
Now, the Women to Watch, Health Watch.
For Health Watch, I'm Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Summer's here. Kids are riding bikes, playing sports, swimming. So what do you do when your 12-year-old slides into home plate and gets a deep, dirty cut in his hand? Or your 6-year-old hits a bump and flies over the handlebars? Add to that, it's after hours or a weekend. Today on Your Radio Doctor, we heard from Dr. Courtney Nelson. She practices pediatric emergency medicine at Nemours AI DuPont Hospital for Children in Wilmington and at Bryn Mawr Hospital. The big question, do I take my child straight to the emergency room, or is urgent care more convenient? Maybe I'll just call the pediatrician in the morning. Some cases clearly need the emergency room. Then you ask, is it safe for you to drive, or should you call 911 immediately so trained professionals can begin treatment on the way to the hospital in cases like your child stops breathing or turns blue, or is having the first seizure, they lose consciousness after a fall, a broken bone is sticking through the skin, choking, a large cut with uncontrollable bleeding. Maybe you can drive if the child has trouble breathing, fever with a stiff neck, they've ingested a poison, a drug, an unknown substance, a head injury with vomiting, or a serious burn. Call your pediatrician for a case of ear pain, a rash. Maybe you can take advantage of telehealth. Dehydration. Make sure your child urinates or has a wet diaper at least once every 8 hours. A high fever probably can wait, but come to the emergency room immediately with fever in a child under age 2 months. Learn what to do if your child has a head injury. A deep cut in the hand or foot may need stitches and a check for tendon damage. A cut on the lip or face may need a plastic surgeon. Won't find that in urgent care. After a fall, wait for EMTs to move the child in case of neck or spine injury. Learn more when you listen to the show on yourradiodoctor.net. Divas, always be prepared.
Now, the Women to Watch, Tech Watch.
Hi, I'm Mary Manzo of Pathways Consulting Group. With so much future opportunity in the technology industry, getting girls interested at an early age without forcing it on them is key. To foster a love for something, you need to make it a part of everyday life. To do this, you need to spark a young girl's interest in STEM activities. It's critical to let them play with objects and ideas to help them see that there's more than one way to get to a solution. And by playing games and puzzles, it increases their ability to recognize and understand patterns and association of things. Using their imagination leads to original thinking and ability to generate multiple solutions to problems. With summer here, maybe this year you're planning a staycation, or maybe you're planning a trip to the beach. Regardless of what you're doing or where you do it, there's lots of activities you can introduce to all ages of girls. Everything from building explosive sandcastles to building robots. Here are a few great websites and products to investigate. Yellowscope has STEM kits for different age groups and can be found on Amazon. They have kits as low as $25. LearningResources.com makes awesome early learning STEM toys. I especially like their STEM toy, Botley, the coding robot geared to ages 5 and up. Little bits are electronic modules that snap together with magnets and are color-coded, turning ideas into little inventions. Their kits can also be found on Amazon. And recently I found a website, steampoweredfamily.com. They have so many inexpensive ways to capture the attention of girls and boys of all ages. I especially like their project called Circuit Bugs. By using pipe cleaners and circuits, you can make little bugs that light up. It's up to us to encourage and nurture the future women technologists, and starting at an early age is key. If you have other ideas you'd like to share or would like more information, email me at mary@pathwayscg.com.
This is Women to Watch with Sue Rocco, Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Welcome back to the show. I'm joined by Natalie Ganella Platts, the director of the Women's Initiative at the George W. Bush Institute, which I think is probably one of the coolest jobs ever. And we will talk about, you know, the work that you're doing. A little bit more about your background. Many of your family members are first responders, you shared with me. And I would imagine that going through the pandemic has been difficult for people for many different reasons, but how did that impact your view on those folks who really had, you know, were at greatest risk during this really difficult year and a half?
Thank you, Sue. I always have to give a shout out to, you know, my mom, my sister-in-law, my sister, my brother, my brother-in-law, who all in different capacities service first responders, and, you know, so proud of them and so many who stepped up amidst, you know, the last year and a half with everything going on in terms of the pandemic. You know, for me, as someone who worked a step removed from service to others, I've always so appreciated how selfless they have been. And I think the pandemic has really demonstrated the importance of our shared humanity and our sense of community. And I have been especially impressed with just how women especially have stepped up. You know, they're the majority of our frontline health workers. And at the same time, there's so many of those who took on the additional needs at home to homeschool and to care for older relatives. And I think that was really apparent, you know, both in a macro sense, but I saw it very much in my family. You know, my mom, my sister, my sister-in-law all work in a hospital capacity as nurse practitioners. And, you know, just seeing how much like my grandmother, they had this get it done attitude just to serve. And it was their job. It's what they signed up for. But at the same time, too, you know, understanding my role as a member of our family and how I could be supportive of them and just checking in to see how they were doing and making sure they had what they needed and, you know, sending little care packages, things like, you know, really nice hand creams, because the amount of hand sanitizer and times they washed their hands were raw.
Right.
And for me, it was, and I think a lot of people in similar situations who felt a bit unable to help, right? Because you don't have the skills or the capacity to do so. There were small ways we could be supportive of them as they did so much for all of us. And I think that experience really made me think a lot about, you know, going forward, how we can better support our first responders and the work that I do every day at the Bush Institute in terms of women and gender equity, thinking about how many women are very much on the front lines of what happened in this pandemic and what happened in so many other, you know, crises situations, right?
Right.
And this one in particular, from healthcare workers to essential workers, they were majority women. And there are a lot of inequities that still persist in our society. And women do not let us down. And so how can we all be better in supporting them as they carry forward our communities and our societies?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to me. We're so used to women stepping up and being nurturers and the caretakers. We have to remind ourselves to help the helpers, right? Help the helpers, because if they're not, you know, working at their best and that they're not well, then, you know, they won't be able to help as many people as they want. One of the things I thought was interesting about your story, Natalie, was that you always seemed to have an interest in world affairs, you know, even when you were young. And that's not typical. I think, you know, growing up, most kids, boys and girls, pretty much centered around their own little unit that, you know, in their own community and town. Where did that interest in world affairs come from?
You know, it's so interesting because Buffalo, New York, right, is kind of tucked away in the very western part of New York State. But so, you know, it's not like, aside from the Canadian border, right, it's not like we live in this very exotic locale. But I grew up in a household with parents who very much encouraged my interest and was always intrigued with what was going on in the world. And, you know, going back to, again, my time spent during my tertiary education at a small university, as well as just my mom being so incredibly supportive of how we each, you know, marched to our own beat, you know, gradually built on that. And by the time I was 22, you know, convinced my mom to let me go abroad for graduate school, where I was able to immerse myself in a classroom setting that had so much diversity and representation from fellow students all around the world, and talking about the most pressing issues of our day. And I was a senior in high school when September 11th happened. And I think that that was hugely formative to really starting to organize the pieces and the interest I had about what was happening around the world. And what's interesting, and I'm so proud of the work we do at the Bush Institute, is the fact that what happens around the world matters to us here at home. You know, I was interested in that from an early age, but we all should have an interest in what's going on, you know, beyond our own borders and how that makes a difference on peace and prosperity everywhere.
Yeah, I really want to talk to you about exactly that, excuse me, when we come back. We have to go into our next break. But I think that, you know, people often feel they can only handle what's happening in their own community. How can they be concerned about, you know, world affairs? And I want to get your take on that when we come back. Stay with us as I continue my interview with Natalie Ganella Platts, director of the Women's Initiative at the George W. Bush Institute. Stay with us for our watch team. We'll be right back.
Now, the Women to Watch, Military Watch.
Hi, I'm Carol Eggert, Senior Vice President of Military Affairs at Comcast NBC Universal. Now, June 6th is not just another lovely summer day. It is a significant day in our nation's military history as we recognize the 70.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
27th anniversary of D-Day, I'm always amazed by the extensive levels of planning, effort, leadership, and bravery that it took to pull off the largest seaborne invasion in history. For those who might not be as familiar with D-Day's magnitude, here's a quick lesson. Under the codename Operation Overlord, the World War II battle that we know as D-Day began on June 6, 1944, with a combined naval, air, and land assault on Nazi-occupied France. The assault included 5,000 ships, 11,000 airplanes, and over 150,000 servicemen. Under General Dwight D. Eisenhower, who was the supreme commander of Allied forces in Europe and the leader of the D-Day invasion, more than 150,000 American, British, and Canadian troops landed on the five beaches along France's Normandy region. D D-Day was just the start of a long and deadly campaign that ultimately made it clear to Germany that defeat was inevitable. Though the end of the war was still a year away, most historians agree that D-Day signaled the beginning of the end of World War II and the collapse of Nazi Germany. The eventual victory came, though, at a great cost. When it was over, the Allied forces had suffered nearly 10,000 casualties with 4,414 war dead. To honor this ultimate sacrifice, the National D-Day Memorial in Bedford, Virginia, has enshrined the 4,414 names of every Allied soldier, sailor, airman, and Coast Guardman who died that day. The memorial, which was first unveiled 20 years ago, was initiated by D-Day veteran Bob Slaughter. He made it his mission to advocate for a memorial to provide an enduring reminder of the price that must be paid for freedom. So if you ever get a chance to visit the memorial, you'll see a beautiful structure that encompasses more than 50 acres of land at the base of the Blue Ridge Mountains. In the meantime, you can virtually visit that and learn more about D-Day by visiting www.dday.org.
Hi, Sue Rocco here, host of Women to Watch. Are you a fan of the show? If so, be sure to sign up for our podcast at womentowatch.net so you never miss a show and can listen on your own time. That's women, the number two, watch.net, N-E-T.
Now the Women to Watch, Nonprofit Watch.
Good evening, Women to Watch listeners. I am Cheryl Mackey, lead of financial empowerment at United Way of Greater Philadelphia and Southern New Jersey. Here at United Way, we have the awesome privilege of working with many nonprofit agencies that are doing great work in the area. It is my mission to connect you, our listeners, with those agencies, maybe to support or to connect those within the community who can benefit from their service. This month, I will be highlighting Uplift Solutions and You Lift You in celebration of Men's Health Awareness Month. In addition, since we are in graduation season, congratulations, by the way, to all who have and will graduate this month. I will share some information concerning the Lubbert College Savings Account Program and our partner, Utility Emergency Services Fund. When you hear about the phenomenal work being done, please share it with your network, and together, let's get the word out. That's it for tonight. I am Cheryl Mackey, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to Women to Watch with Sue Rocco on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Natalie, just before the break, you had made a mention of, you know, why it's important for all of us to care about world affairs. And I think that often people may, it may not be a selfish reason, they just feel overwhelmed that, you know, they have enough on their plate worrying about their family and their own community. Talk a little bit about, you know, what you feel our obligation is to not only pay attention to what's happening in other countries, but to, you know, try to contribute and do something about it.
Well, as I said before, you know, what happens around the world matters to us here at home. And that's a big part of the work we do at the Bush Institute in terms of our global engagement. And, you know, I'm going to talk about this in the context of gender equity specifically. And you point out, you know, women were always meant to lead. And so the work we do is to support women and girls who are leading change in their communities and countries. And at the end of the day, if inequity exists, if lack of freedoms, lack of agency exists anywhere, you know, that ladders back to our status in the United States as well. You know, we all benefit when people have an opportunity to thrive in their local community, wherever that may be. But at the end of the day, there are a lot of places where people are just trying to survive. And for us, you know, the pandemic especially, I think, has demonstrated how important global engagement is and how important U.S. leadership abroad is. Because what is global is local, and what is local is global. You know, there are a lot of events going on right now. For example, you know, our work for a long time is focused on the status of women and girls in places like Afghanistan. And with, you know, changes to U.S. engagement there, the rights and well-being of women and girls in that country is an important litmus test for how the future of that country will continue to evolve. And when you look at the correlations between societies that are free and fair, societies that are democratic and peaceful, and how gender equity exists within those communities, you know, there you see a country that is prosperous, or you see a country that is not prosperous. You know, Mrs. Bush often says, when you see a country where half the population is left out, you see a failed state. And, you know, you ladder back to what happened 20 years ago with September 11th, you can see directly how the status of women thousands of miles away makes a difference to our safety, security, and prosperity here in the United States. And this is true in so many instances.
Right. So here, you know, tell me, when I think of a country like Afghanistan, it's not so much the work that you're doing, whether it's, you know, helping around education, providing resources, helping female entrepreneurs. There's so much that needs to be done to change the mindset of the society there. That, to me, is the toughest. You know, what is working when it comes to that? What have you seen?
So I think in terms of what's working, whether we're talking about Afghanistan, whether we're talking about the status of young women, adolescent girls in places like sub-Saharan Africa, or whether we're talking about gender equity in our own country, here in the United States, is the approaches that take into context the holistic well-being of communities at large, right? And it's not just about education. It's not just about economic opportunity. It's not just about addressing gender-based violence, but understanding where those intersections exist. And we still have a lot of work to do in terms of breaking down the silos between the issues, but there's a lot of hope taking place. You know, I think of programs like the DREAMS program, which is a program from PEPFAR and the U.S. State Department that really looks at all of these holistic elements that contribute to the well-being of young women and adolescent girls in places like sub-Saharan Africa, and understanding that if we can prevent their exposure to things like HIV and gender-based violence from the outset, they have a greater opportunity to fulfill their potential. And that has a knock-on effect to how their community can grow and prosper. And when you think about, you know, some of these regions of the world where half of their population is under the age of 20 or even under the age of 18, like, that makes a difference. And so we need more of that. We need more investments, more advocacy, more action around really the holistic well-being of individuals. And this is imperative, especially for women and girls, because you can move forward on education, you can move forward on economic opportunity, but if you're not addressing all of the intersecting barriers, you're only going to get so far.
Right. You know, Natalie, the work that you're doing, you see some of the most horrific things that can happen to girls and women. And I was curious how you manage your own psyche around that. You know, those of us who are here in the United States and you know, those day-to-day issues are nowhere near in our realm of thinking. How do you stay hopeful?
Yeah, that's a really great question, and I think it's difficult, more difficult at certain points in dealing with certain things. But I have to give a lot of credit to my mom here. You know, my mom in her career spent a good chunk of it working on issues like sexual violence and sexual assault, and she dealt with some really heavy things. And this, she did this work during a very formative time in my life. I was a teenager, right? And just seeing how she made sure to have balance between professional and personal responsibilities and well-being. And that's really hard. But I know that I'm a better advocate. I know that I can contribute more fully when I have that balance. And, you know, I try to channel that into the work that I do. I will say it's very hard to shut off, but it means that the work matters. And you know, every day, to use the platform we have through our work at the Bush Institute to, you know, channel my passion and, you know, the fire in my belly to creating a more equitable vision of our society keeps me going. And I have to make sure that, you know, balance exists within my own life, because I am a better contributor when you know, my holistic well-being is cared for.
As a self-proclaimed classic type A overachiever, are you working on that? Are you better today than you were when you were younger? Where do you fall in that?
You know, and I think for a lot of us, this past year and a half with the pandemic has, you know, for me has been a period of self-growth. And I think for a lot of other people, and understanding that both my type A tendencies are both an asset and a challenge, and to, you know, work on those challenges, but also leverage those assets. And, you know, it's hard. And I've learned along the way, just how important that balance has been. And I'm so grateful for, you know, my immediate family now as well, my husband, my son, because they help anchor me, and they help me, you know, keep north and moving forward. But I'm not going to lie, it's not always easy. And, you know, events that are going on around the world sometimes require more of your time and more of your attention and more of your passion. But that's why we need more people who are signed on to, you know, our shared goals of women and leadership and gender equity at large.
Exactly. Exactly. Listen, we're going to go into our last break. And when we come back, I really want to dive into the work that you're doing, some programs you're excited about, you know, within the Institute, and talk a little bit about President George Bush, if you've had interaction with him, and anything you can share, any little personal tidbits. Stay with us. I'll continue my conversation with Natalie Ganella Platts, and we will be right back. Coming up next is our Coach's Corner podcast, which is a shorter version of our weekly show and can be heard wherever you get your favorite podcast.
I'm BJ Gray with this week's Coach's Corner.
I love frameworks for everything I do. They give me something to follow in order to achieve a goal or build foundations for new things I'm learning. And when I was learning how to expand my leadership style, to not only be able to understand the business world, but to lead a culture that thrived, I needed a framework to establish a more thoughtful leadership style. And that started with leading myself in a more authentic way. A self-awareness framework is what I developed. Know my personal story and how it shapes me. Know what triggers me. Know how to reflect and watch my thoughts that create my perception. Know my damaging habits that hold me back or my sabotaging behaviors. Know how not to retreat into my story. Know strategies for negative emotions and self-management. And know the power of my emotions and how to use them as a guidepost. If this framework piques your interest and you want help with your leadership transformation, then get in touch and sign up for an appointment with me at bjgray.com.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Coach's Corner. Connect with me directly on LinkedIn or at bjgray.com. Until next time, I'm BJ from Coach's Corner.
Now, more of Women to Watch with Sue Rocco on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Welcome back to the show. I'm so honored to have with me Natalie Ganella Platts, the director of the Women's Initiative at the George W. Bush Institute. And Natalie, I wanted to, you know, give you time to talk about what are you working on right now that you're excited about, and give our listeners a real sense of the type of job you have. You know, what does a typical day look like for you?
It's a great question. I have the most incredible job in the world. And, you know, our work through the Women's Initiative is focused on supporting women and girls who are leading change in their communities and countries. And so we have programming, for example, that supports women leaders in places like the Middle East, North Africa, and Afghanistan, who are seeking to address economic opportunity and economic inequity at macro and micro levels, because we know that lack of opportunity is such an issue and such a contributor to broader instability. I also have the distinct privilege of working directly with first ladies from around the world who, you know, are using their platform really as an apolitical conduit to bring together civil society and government institutions around really important issues, things like gender-based violence, things like access to secondary education, you know, broader issues of gender inequality in their countries. And in addition to that, you know, we have this incredible platform as the Bush Institute to be able to contribute to ideas and to help shape policy that seeks to give everyone an opportunity to fulfill their potential. So, you know, writing op-eds and doing fantastic research projects and using the podium that we have to make sure that the representation of lived experiences of those who have unique experiences or facing unique challenges are seen and heard by those who have the influence to contribute and invest the resources that are needed to make a difference. So our work is really varied. It's very global in nature in terms of the Women's Initiative. We also do a lot of cross collaboration with other areas of engagement at the Institute, things like looking at women's economic empowerment in our country here in the United States, and also thinking about gender-based violence and its influence on immigration and, you know, what we're seeing on our southern border right now in terms of what women are experiencing in places like Central America and the Northern Triangle of Central America. So, you know, every day we get to work on some of the world's most pressing challenges and encourage collaboration and good ideas and progress to really push the needle forward for women and girls everywhere.
One of the things I thought was interesting that you did, you co-authored a first of its kind analysis on global first ladies. And I thought that was really neat because, you know, there's not always the title of it, A Role Without a Rule Book, right? So here's all these women who have an opportunity to be influential. And when I read about that, I wanted to ask you, how important do you think it is for men to be supportive and be a part of all of the initiatives around women's empowerment and leadership?
Men and women are so incredibly important together in moving the needle forward in terms of equity for all. And what's so interesting about our First Lady's work, one, it's just an incredible privilege, and that report was such an honor to contribute to. I got to interview and profile 14 current and former First Ladies from around the world to help influence our First Ladies Initiative work. But this role of a First Lady is a larger characterization of the challenges and status of women more broadly. And, you know, these women have a very narrow margin of error, and if they overstep or evade that, they hear about it. And how we treat men and women in this role is very different. And so just as important as it is to have influential women, pushing against the inequities that exist, we need men too, because it takes all of us to get to a better state of equal, a true state of equal. And we have to confront antiquated ideas of gender norms, and women cannot do that on our own. You know, it's taken us, 100 years since the 19th Amendment to get to this point, and we still have a long way to go. And men are a big part of how we move forward.
Natalie, are you ever concerned about your own safety in that you're bringing these programs and these opportunities to women in places where there is discrimination and violence? Is that ever a concern for you?
Well, first and foremost, I have to say the safety and well-being of our program participants and our partners is front of mind. Yeah. I also have to add, the places I have had the privilege to travel to, the people I've had the opportunity to work with, have welcomed us and have been the most incredible extended community I could ever ask for. And so in my role, too, confronting some of the bias that may exist about certain parts of the world, and also to be able to present to people just the innovation and the progress and the prosperity that is happening, often at community levels, is so important to our work. And again, I mentioned that platform before. You know, wherever possible, we like to give voice and visibility to those who are really pushing against some of the prejudice and the inequities that persist, whether that be in terms of gender or that be in terms of, thinking about different parts of the world.
Yeah, they must be so incredibly grateful, and your work is so rewarding. I wish you continued success, Natalie, and I hope you'll stay in touch with us.
Absolutely. I have to say I'm so incredibly grateful for our partners, and it is a true privilege, the work we carry forward together, and it has been a true privilege to join you on this fantastic program. So I look forward to staying in touch.
Thank you so much. That's it, everyone, for another week of Women to Watch. Thank you for being with me, and stay tuned next week for my interview with author of the She Book, Tanya Markle. Have a great week, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Women to Watch with Sue Rocco, a Jacob Media production. If you're interested in learning more about the power of the radio hour, contact Joe Kraus at 267-261-3428. Does not reflect the views of WPHD or its management. Today's program has been pre-recorded. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.